thanks for joining me today for another conversation. I'm Sharon Butler, a painter, art writer, and publisher of Two Coats of Paint, a New York blogzine that focuses on painting. And the playlist this morning was courtesy of Drew Bishop. Today I'm joined by artist and early art blogger Carolyn Zick. In 1995, Carolyn graduated from the MFA program at the State University at Albany and received Presidential Honors Convocation Distinguished MFA Project. She has a Master of Art from Central Washington University in Ellensburg, Washington, and a Bachelor of Art from the same university. And I've known Carolyn since I joined the art blogging community 15 years ago. Carolyn has been blogging about art in Seattle at Dangerous Chunky, beloved by the Seattle artist and curator cohort, and it quickly became one of my favorites too, because she had a distinctive and really idiosyncratic blend of art criticism, humor, and insightful observation. Carolyn is also an artist focusing on drawing, painting, and more recently poetry and chapbooks. And when I learned from an Instagram post, Natch, that she's been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, I got in touch and invited her to join me today to talk about her life and work. Hi, Carolyn.
Hey, thank you so much, Sharon, for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for making the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to mention the diagnosis without jumping right into how it changed your life and art practice and your perspective. But can we just start with a quick description of what you're working on right now?
Yeah.
In the studio?
Oh,
just to sort of give us some sense of, you know, what your art practice is like.
Yeah. In January and February, I started these tiny little drawings, mostly done with my favorite precise V pen and also gouache. They were just mark making, and I started putting them together, and they reminded me of bacteria.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted to mount them on the corner of a wall, and they were growing out from each other. So that's what I was doing in the earlier part of the year, and I'm still kind of dinking around with that. Although I was doing some painting last week, which was great.
You worked on a series of biological forms, if I remember.
Yeah, it's come back. It's been a cyclical thing unintentionally. Mm-hmm. I did, I think it was back in 2005, I did a whole, actually I spent 2 years doing a series on radiolaria, which are these little tiny things that live in the sea, little single cell. But they're beautiful. They look like lace, and they are all different. So,
mm-hmm. And you made sculpture.
I did. Yes, I made sculpture from them as well. And I was working at a natural history museum at the time, and I became really enthralled with these little guys.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But then I did. I started a series. To make a long story short, about brain cancer, because my first husband died of brain cancer. And then I was starting to think about returning to revisit that when this year happened. So
he died of brain cancer. How long ago was that?
So that was almost 8 years ago. He in 2014. We'd been together for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things that seemed to have come out of the blue, but you know, in hindsight, there's always signs. Yeah, he glioblastoma, brain cancer, which is what John McCain died of, and many
uh-huh.
other people. Which is basically you get the longest people live usually is 16 months with it, and he only lived 3 months.
Oh wow!
So yeah, it was a kind of a hurricane that blew through my life as far
right.
as all that kind of stuff goes.
Did you say that was 8 years ago?
Not quite 8 years ago.
Not quite 8 years ago. That must have been really hard to.
It was devastating. It kind of knocked me off my feet. And there's times in my life where I wasn't writing, wasn't making art, and those are the times that come
mm-hmm.
to pass.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, that's interesting that you say that, because the thread that seems to define your creative vision, I mean, to me, seems to be this interest in documenting the smallness
mm-hmm.
and the everydayness.
Oh, I love
life.
The everyday. Yes.
You know, you develop narrative through accumulation. And
yep.
in paintings, it's this agitated mark. And in writing, it's through observation and ideas.
Yes, but I think that's a good assessment.
So it surprises me that you were able to just stop.
You can stop making stuff. Oh, I know. Well, some stuff, yeah, I think I just didn't know what to do with myself. I was just like, I felt like I had lost my identity, which took a couple of years to get away out of. Like I would go to the ocean a lot, or I would, travel around, just trying to, I think, kind of running away from it. So.
I was reading in your artist statement, you say that there's an obsession with, you see this thread or themes, an obsession with unidentified birds, unidentifiable birds, places of the heart, the continuum of grief, and that feeling of inadequacy found while being human. Can you talk about that a little bit? What do you mean about the inadequacy
Adequacy. I
found
think,
while being human?
yeah, the never feeling that you quite measure up, and not feeling that you're good enough, not feeling that, for whatever reasons. What are we? Insecurities, human insecurities, human frailties.
Do you think that that's something that's kind of unique to, or not unique, but exacerbated by living as an artist?
I think we allow ourselves to feel that stuff more deeply when we can. Sometimes it's too much. I mean, that's what happened to me. It was just too much. But then time goes
Well,
by and
we
we
all
can.
sort of buy into this gatekeeper situation,
Oh, exactly.
that just makes inadequacy seem that much larger.
I agree, and it's annoying. It's really annoying to me that I let that weigh on me for so long.
But you had such a Dangerous Chunky. I got to know you and really the Seattle art community through posts on your posts on Dangerous
Oh,
Chunky. And I just want to read one of the blog posts here. I
my
actually
God, I love
found
it.
some I found some old files on the Internet Wayback Machine.
Wow.
So just to give listeners a sense of what your blog was like, here's a post from 2006. Last night was so popular, I couldn't find a parking space. I thought maybe I'd run into baseball season traffic or something, but no, the crowd came out in force to see art. I did a drive-by of a handful of galleries. Assorted snaps can be found here. It was the opening of Foster White's gallery relocation, now sitting side by side with the Greg Kucera gallery. The cavernous new space was a bizarre thing to enter after previously knowing Foster White as a small maze-like setup. A running joke of the night, though, was allegedly signage on the gallery front says painting, sculpture, Chihuly. Perhaps the next generation will major in Chihuly in art school. While I missed some new spaces that were right under my nose, like Punch, it was great to see some newest, now established places like Platform really hitting their stride and packed to the gills. Good news for fellow Shift studio mates Garth and Pierre, whose collaborative effort Inventory opened last night. Garth was just awarded a Fulbright to Mexico next year, and Pierre last night missed going to the opening afresh at Elizabeth Leach Gallery, which also features some of his work. Stay tuned. Next week, we'll be heralding a new column featuring a looking back at Seattle's old art And
cosmos.
then your latest blog entry, I like this part. It says, and this was from March, and I'm not sure where that falls in terms of, your cancer diagnosis. Maybe your last post was before. It says, I do like the idea of doing anything besides being on Instagram. I miss blogs, the voice of the slower world out there that I'm trying to half-heartedly do something about. There has to be more to life than what is currently offered as the gold standard of being on this planet. I think I'll go look at some photographs to cheer me up this morning. You want to talk about that a little bit? I mean, your earlier and the whole blogging community, really, there was such energy in the early 2000s, right?
Oh,
And people were just living out loud and or thinking out loud and, just sharing their
seems so
thoughts and
innocent, just uncontrived. There was no, there were no influencers. Everybody was on the same ground level, and it's like, hey, what do you got? And then people were very generous, sharing links. And it's so funny because I went down a blog roll rabbit hole this morning too, thinking about stuff I used to love to read, and It's just, it would just, you know, you could go on and on and on, and it was, everyone seems so enthusiastic, I guess is a word.
Right. And you know, living where I was living, right near where you are now in Mystic, Connecticut, and I just got such a great sense of what the Seattle art community was like. And then I ultimately ended up, you know, showing with
I
Robert
love that
Yoder.
so
And then
much.
I remember coming out to go, you know, give a talk at Cornish and meeting, doing all these studio visits while I was there and meeting Eva and Sharon Arnold.
Oh,
Yeah, it was just such
all the
a,
people.
it was such a dynamic community. I haven't been out there in a long time, so I don't know. It may still be. But you left. When you left, did your work change quite a bit? What happened?
You mean when I left
Tell the story
Seattle?
about why you end up on the East Coast now.
Yeah, so it's a love story. I fell in love 2 years ago. Well, a little more than 2 years ago, with Drew. We reconnect. This is classic. We reconnected via Facebook, but we used to work together 22 years ago in New York City. So we were like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And then kind of circled our wagons around each other for a couple of years, and we were like, "Okay, this is, you know what? Time's marching on. We're not getting any younger." And he's got kids out here, so I was like, "You know what? If we're gonna be together, I have to move." So I decided we bought a house, we got married, and then I decided to move,
Oh,
and
that's
it was,
funny. So you bought the house before you even had moved east. But you had lived in the east on the East Coast before, but
I
not in
had
New London.
not New London, not the New London's a tiny town. I love and adore New London, but it's 27,000 people versus, I mean, Seattle's a little bit bigger. New York City's much bigger. So, yeah, it's very quaint, but it also, you know, of course there's things you miss from major cities, like, you know, some cultural things and maybe, you know, food and stuff like that. Yeah, my work changed 'cause I kind of, when I came out, so I moved. I literally put my two cat I sent a moving van off, put my two cats and myself into a car, and drove across country the week of April 6th, which was right at the start of the pandemic. So it was just myself and the truckers on the road. It's like, was I was like, was can I even get a hotel room? Because it
I
was
remember
scary,
that.
and I wouldn't. I had, you know, I had my mask, and I had my spray bottle of, you know, bleach,
And
and.
everyone was thinking about quarantining, but nobody was quite, you know, knew what that meant
Nobody
before they
knew.
closed the borders between the states.
Yes, and I was like, "Do you think I can get across the country?" Well, I'm just gonna go. So I did that and landed here. And then, of course, my whole time I've been in New London has been during the pandemic, so I have a very skewed vision version of it in my head. Like I don't, yeah, I've been pretty isolated. But I also kind of fell in. I mean, it's a beautiful town. It's right on the water. And you know, it's a sea town. And like many people, I started doing these daily walks all over the neighborhood to get to know it. And that's when I started painting maps of my walks and writing poetry about it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I do know that area, and so I love reading your poems, and they are so specific. And you'll say, I went down Montauk to Pequot, and I know exactly where you are. And they
Right.
have this very specific sense of place.
Well, good. I'm
And
glad.
then weather and, you know, climate and so forth, even the type of garbage that you find.
The Dunkin' Donuts.
Exactly,
It's
exactly.
everywhere.
Do you want to read? A poem or
Sure,
two?
one of my poems?
Well, wait,
Sure.
before we get to that, why don't you talk a little bit about how you started to think about writing poetry?
Oh
Or is
God,
it
that
something
is,
you always had been
you
doing?
know, it's something I've, you know how everyone writes bad high school poetry. Well, I did that, but through my life, and I've never studied poetry. And there's by no means do I consider myself an authority on it, but I've always had. There's been an occasional where it'll just come out where I feel like this is how this sounds to me as a poem, and I've kept there's yeah I've kept. Logs of them. This outpouring was much more significant than previous.
Well, the other thing is that poetry has such a rich history that it's a little bit daunting. It's almost easier if you just call it, you know, experimental writing or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly.
And I like on your Instagram, you posted a little excerpt from Stacey Szymaszek's 2016 book, Journal of Ugly Sights.
Oh, yeah.
As kind of a,
oh,
a,
my God.
You know, a role model for the type of poems that you're writing. Because they're very much, they're not about wordplay or obscuring meaning or,
no.
or, you know, there's nothing sort of tricky about them.
Yeah,
right?
they're just this kind of, this is what I saw, this is what I'm experiencing.
So it's this cross between, you know, a diary or a journal, but it's even more experimental than that.
I think so, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And I've kept a journal since I was in fifth grade. So I've been writing. It's like something I just have to do.
Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting how, because I relate to that, because your, you know, art practice is not just the painting and the drawing, but also the writing.
Yeah, you and I have that very much in common.
Yeah. I mean, if I were to look at back sketchbooks from, you know, my early days as an undergraduate, I'm sure a lot of it would just be writing. What about this? What about that? You know, observing things, but recording it in words rather than in drawings.
Yes, I love that.
Do you want to read one or two of your poems?
Sure. So I have these on my website called the Chapbook Project. Here's one I wrote, and some of these are love letters to Drew. Also, when I first came out here. So this one's called The House of Lists, L-I-S-T-S. And here we go. I put on clown clothes to make you laugh. Paint my nails silver and shallowly debate with you the color of my hair. The train running by the hospital punctuates a determined sky announcing its horn. The dandelion bouquet given to me yesterday is beautiful again. I sit patiently waiting for the workday to end. It's the same train who delivered me here in February. A train now in July, no unessential can get on. I reflect on the fact at 10:15 a.m. that it's an uncomfortable 75 degrees already. Make note of it. And that's the end.
Nice. Nice. I really love that. You want to read another?
I'm a gardener, and this one's called Lupine and Lily. I get very attached to my plants. In May, when walking the aisles of Home Depot, you were there. A Russell lupine for sale. I exclaimed, caught off guard, "You're here! I have missed you." Yesterday it was Jack in the pulpit. I've learned there's a Jane, too. Someday all my plants will surround me again, my tender friends.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Mm-hmm. So you're a gardener.
I am.
I didn't realize.
Yeah. It's like another one of those hobbies that kind of exploded.
Right, right. Is your house surrounded by perennials and wildly growing things?
Yeah, the saddest thing about leaving Seattle is I had a 13-year garden, and it was, oh God, I just loved it so much. It was like my little retreat. So it's a lot of work to start a new garden, and we have basically a blank slate here, so of course I'm not getting much done this year.
Right. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's treatment like?
So I came
tell up us about your diagnosis and
sure,
then
sure.
treatment. And
so I wasn't feeling good in the winter, and I just like kept getting, I was tired. Like I would go to the grocery store and have to come back home and lie down, and didn't have health insurance until March. And in March I went to I thought I had an ulcer, so I went and got that checked out, and they were like, well, you have an ulcer, but you also have, wait for it, pancreatic cancer that has moved into your stomach, your lungs, and your adrenals. So this was March 15th, the next day I saw an oncologist, and now I'm in chemotherapy. So it's palliative care. I'm terminal. It's stage 4 cancer, so I'm not quite sure how long I'll be on this planet, but they're basically trying to keep the growth of my cancer right now at bay. So I have chemotherapy every other week. And it's like every other day, it's like random. Some days I feel pretty good. Like right now, I feel awesome. Thank God. Yesterday I was pretty tired. You just end up laying down a lot, and you have nausea. You have stuff doesn't. You don't feel yourself. So.
Right. And I love that you gave me this list of artist books and poetry of things that have interested you over time. And it wasn't just the names of artists, it was like specific shows and catalogs. I love that. But I was looking at the Chantal Jouffe one, and can I just read a quote from there?
Yeah,
It says,
absolutely.
"Painting makes me feel in the present, which is already important. You're in the moment. You're not planning ahead. You're just there, which is really great. That's the greatest thing. You're just right there in that. I don't know if it makes me feel safe, but that's irrelevant when I'm painting. I forget bad stuff or good stuff. There is no value. You stop judging or evaluating. I don't have any sense of my work as a whole. I like the idea of being in the present. I don't like to look back or forward. I like to think, wow, this is what I'm doing now. I don't like to look at the work historically." And I
I love
can really
that.
relate to that because I don't really think back very much, And when you
Yeah.
posted some pictures, when I was looking at your Instagram and you had pictures of you posted from years ago, and I thought, oh my God, I don't even know if I have pictures of myself all those years ago. I just don't even think about it. And I don't really think of the future all that much. And yet at the same time, we're always thinking in turn, we're always looking forward to the next thing, the next show, the next project, finishing the next blog post or, whatever it is. So
Exactly.
I'm just curious how your notion of time has changed, if it
It
has.
does change for sure. Like for instance, the first things you have to let go of is like, well, I'm probably not going to do X travel. I'm not going to travel anymore, just because my body won't let me. And like sad stuff. Like the week of my diagnosis, we had ordered two pear trees and some rose bushes, and those came, and I'm like, and they looked like little sticks, and I'm like, you know what? I'll never get to see these grow, which was sad. But then you have to start letting stuff like that go, or you can just, become comatose with it.
And also, I think maybe it's about the process of watching it grow.
Yeah, exactly. And they are growing right now, which is exciting. So, yeah, I think that was a really great quote to read from her because, yeah, you end up having to live day by day, which maybe that's not such a bad thing. And like you're really celebrating the moments that are great, which sounds really corny, but it's like when I feel good, I'm like, wow, I feel good today. This is awesome. Like maybe I can go down in the studio, or maybe I can, finish this thing I'm working on, or maybe I can go do a load of dishes so nobody else has to in the house,
I mean, I guess I would be torn between just wanting to lie on the couch all the time and just say, what's the point? And, trying to finish things.
Yeah, it's
I think I would
interesting.
swing wildly between the two.
And I have. Oh yeah, you're like, why? Why am I here? And then you're like, but it's interesting that you do end up wanting to do the things. Like I've kind of surprised myself. I'm like, yeah, I still have stuff I want to do. I still have stuff I want to finish.
I mean, and then it sort of gets at the heart of why we make these things anyway. And if it's ultimately for ourselves, then there's no reason not to continue doing that. Interesting. Well, tell me about the paintings of the walks.
Oh, so I started making their maps, but making little abstractions, but and also looking at Google Maps, trying to figure out, now, where am I going?
And New London
And
is funny because it juts into the water, and you're not quite sure if you're south or north or east or west. It's
I have a
strangely situated.
horrible it is and I have a horrible sense of direction, so it's even funnier that I'm making maps. But then they kind of took on their own life as like line drawings and working with color is what I was really trying to do.
Are they small? You said they're small?
Some of them are small, am going to, like, most of them were done on these little 9x12 pieces of paper, the original ones. And then I started doing some larger oil paintings of them. But the small ones were gratifying. Yeah, I'm looking at them right now. The larger ones are not so much finished. I called those pathways. I was working on those at the end of last year. Actually, I want to finish some of them.
Well, they all have this, you have this agitated brushstroke that I find very compelling. And I can also see from them that you're very interested in the bittersweet that grows everywhere in that area.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, I remember when I lived there, it was just like, you can't get away from it.
That's so true.
On the one hand, it's beautiful. It has beautiful berries. But on the other hand, it chokes everything.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah, but I mean, and it seems like it's made perfectly. It suits your style of painting so perfectly.
My mark making.
Yes, exactly. The paintings are usually, or they seem to be, diptych format? Triptych?
It seems like it. Yeah, I've done a number of those. I have, indeed.
Well, that seems to make sense because it's sort of that idea of, you know, accumulation. You know,
accumulation,
make one, make
conversation
two, make three.
Between each other.
Right. Do they automatically, you know, you make them as diptychs, or do you put them together after they're made?
Yeah, I think it depends on the moment. I'm not one of those people that plots things out too heartily. So usually it's like, oh, what? Or they may be at one, a couple of them have been, these were separate, and then, oh, they look like they belong together.
So. We're about halfway through, and I usually take this, where we take a little break, and I can give a brief shout to Tukut's friends.
Absolutely.
And sponsors. First, I want to thank Pratt Manhattan Gallery, now in the ground floor space at 144 West 14th Street. They have a show, Chromatherapy in an Age of Doubt. It's the Fine Arts MFA alumni from 2020 exhibition. They're catching up from COVID cancellations, and that's on view through June 4th. At the Drawing Center, Randy Rice McCormick has a solo show, Traveling Sideways, and in the project room, Drawing Through with Beth Derry, William Holton, and Patricia Spergel through June 18th. They're located at 547 West 27th Street, Suite 500 in Chelsea. At Norte Mar, you can make an appointment to see a two-person show with Mimi Chen Ting and Lizzie Scott on view through June 5th. And they're located at 88 Pine Street in Cypress Hills in Brooklyn, which is on the Z and J train, the Crescent Street stop. Members of the Two Coats social media project, the Two Coats team helps them organize and produce their social media feeds. We're accepting new accounts for July. So if you're interested, click on the social media sidebar, social media ad in the Two Coats of Paint sidebar for information on how to get started. Wouldn't it be nice to take a break from posting on Instagram for a few months and let somebody else do it for you? And then finally, huge, huge, huge thanks to all the generous readers and listeners who made donations to our annual year-end fund drive. Thanks to your generous support, Two Coats of Paint is celebrating our 15th year. And while I'm on the subject of Two Coats of Paint, the gallery guide is coming out this week, so look for that, www.twocoatsofpaint.com. All right, in case you're just joining us, I'm talking to artist, poet, and early art blogger Carolyn Zick. Feel free to raise your hand if you have a comment or question that you want to share. I'm going to invite Sally up to the stage, but I also want to talk a little bit about the Crit Club. So hang on, let's invite Sally up. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. I absolutely love your paintings. I was looking at the latest ones, the large walking paintings, pathways.
Yeah.
And what struck me so much was your color. And I was wondering if that's something you had been interested in for a while, or if this is recent, and because the color is just so beautiful to me, and it's very uplifting. And
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I was wondering if that is uplifting for you too.
I think so. Yeah, it's so funny because I do consider myself mainly, I do a lot of drawing, which doesn't, charcoal drawings. But when I do paint, I'm obsessed with color. And and that's another reason I like gardening too. It's like you can, there's color all over the place in gardening. So yeah, to me, it's, I love color. I love thinking about how color lays next to each other. Or why is it not working there? Get that out of there.
Yes, totally. I totally understand. Definitely. So, kindred spirit there.
I take it you're a
So,
painter.
yes, my PTR is of a drawing, but yeah, my work's very color, very important. And anyway, it's just so nice to see your work. So,
Oh,
thank you.
thank you. I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Sally. Shima has joined. Did you have a question or comment, Shima?
I do. Good morning, Sharon, and good morning. I've got C here, Carolyn.
Hi.
Good morning. A fellow Seattleite here, so it's 7:34
You are up early. Oh my God.
Well, I was up at 6, well, that you did that display in Tacoma, so I feel like I've missed you by a minute because you left just as I was beginning to hit the Seattle art scene
Yeah.
and connect with the gallery spaces. But Sharon Arnold is someone that I do know of. Would you tell me a little bit? We were talking about in a different room yesterday about in New York, there's a lot of platforms and support groups for artists in New York. And I was really racking my brain to think of communities or support groups in Seattle. And it's the usual ones, Artist Trust,
Yeah.
For Culture. But are there any others that you would recommend for those of us who are not New York based?
No, well, I think that was a problem for many of us in Seattle. When I was, I mean, a lot of my stuff I did in Seattle was in the like 2005 to 2007. There was a really awesome art blog that Jim Dimitri ran called Art Dish, and that was kind of a community hub back in the day. And then and people just get burned out doing this stuff. But it used to be Jim, Sharon Arnold, and I, we'd meet up and we'd call it the Art Dish board meeting. It was really fun. We'd go out for coffee and we used to, Ava Lake used to come up and meet up with us. Michael Vroom of Vroom Journal. So there used to, when people were blogging, I swear to God, it felt more like a community. And I think, you know, that social media obviously became the next wave of stuff people were doing, and that kind of stuff died out. So I feel sorry. I feel for you because yeah, there was a lack of. I mean, that's why I wish I could tell you where to go.
Just missed you by a minute.
Yeah, you probably we probably did, like ships passing in the night.
Right. So I do know, like, Center on Contemporary Arts is pretty good, and sort of that the art scene is blooming out here, so
That's
it's
good.
kind of a shame to see you go, but
Don't forget Robert Yoder's Season Gallery too. He's another great one to go look up.
All right, it's been great to connect with you, and
You
glad that
too.
we could talk about Seattle
Oh,
today.
thanks.
Thanks.
Thank
You know,
you.
the thing about the early blogging community that was so special was that we all connected through the blogs, but
Yeah.
then we actually met IRL as well
It was
and kind of
amazing.
cemented the relationships.
Yeah, it
You
was
know, I remember
fantastic.
creating a group with Joanne Matera called Art Bloggers At, and we
Oh, I
would go
love
to the
Joanne. I
art
met her last
fairs.
year.
We would go to the art
Oh.
fairs, and all the bloggers would come, you know, so that we would meet each other, and then it would raise visibility for the blog.
So
So, you know,
fantastic.
if there's not anything that seems interesting in Seattle, you should, you know, people should just make something,
Say,
you
start
know,
your own
create their own.
blog.
I mean, I always
Exactly.
look at it this way, like, the Oscars is such a big deal now, and the awards for films and stuff. But you know what that was? That was just a group of people that wanted to give themselves awards, is how that
Exactly.
started, you know. And then it just sort of gave them, it validated their existence, and then gave them credibility, and then it became prestigious. And you know, these things grow. So, you know, you can't underestimate the power of DIY
Just doing
activity.
it.
All right, so let's talk. And one of those one a type one type of thing like that is the Crit Club or Crit Lab.
Yes. And this is
Did I get the
amazing.
name wrong? Crit Lab.
Yeah,
Yes.
Crit Lab.
Well, tell me a little bit about that, because
So this
I'm
is,
familiar with Patricia Miranda, and I have been
yeah.
for a while. And I think I think you might be the first artist I know who's participated
in
this.
Oh my God, I love, she's a force of nature. She's amazing. She runs these labs basically every day of the week, but besides doing her own stuff. And it's basically, I was, you know, being out here in New London, feeling a little and isolated during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I wanted to reconnect with people, painters, et cetera. So I applied to be in Crit Lab, and I was part of their Monday group until my chemotherapy got in the way. And basically, it's just reviewing each other's work and having critical discussions, which I mm-hmm. really missed. And she really keeps everybody on track and very generous. We have a show up, or no, it just came down last weekend. She has her own gallery in Port Chester called Map Space, where we had a Crit Lab exhibit, which was really great. I didn't get a chance to get out there because I wasn't mm-hmm. feeling well. But so, yeah, it was, and just talking and meeting with other people that are trying to do the same thing you are. On a, you know, every other week, basically, was really a great experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so important to have conversation around your work and reading
yeah,
about
get
what
feedback,
other people
yeah.
are doing and, you know, discussing things that you've read. And it's really mm-hmm. hard when you live in a town, you know, that's sort of off the beaten path like New London.
It is, yeah.
And,
so you kind of have to find your own way to...
Right.
To reconnect with people. So, yeah, that was great. I absolutely love those. I love Crit Lab. I highly recommend it to anybody.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your drawings. I love your figure drawings.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, and I think I said this the other day. I do miss figure. I miss drawing directly from a model. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a old school thing to say, but I did start maybe about 3 years ago, started going back to figure drawing sessions when I was still in Seattle at Seattle Artist League, which mm-hmm. is another great place. I should shout out to them too, because they were really instrumental in getting my foot back into doing stuff again.
Right.
And drawing directly from the model, just because it's some, I don't know, maybe it's related to art school or there, but there's something about having to observe and just, I respond to it really well.
Well, there's something like about, you know, having this shared activity of all drawing and then all putting your work up and seeing how different
yes.
each person interprets
yes.
the same subject.
Yes, it's very gratifying.
Mm-hmm. And yet, like Chantal Jouffe said, you're very much, when you're drawing, you're completely in the present.
That is so true. Time stands still, mm-hmm. like she said. I, that's such a great quote you pulled from her. I love that.
Yeah, time stands still, and you're never ready to be done.
Yeah.
You know, you could always use another, you know, two more minutes or
it's
five
true.
More minutes. Or, I remember having a student who had been studying in Italy at this figure. I teach an MFA seminar at a very traditional figure painting school, the New York Academy.
Oh, yeah.
He had gone to a drawing workshop in Italy, and they would spend a week, 8 hours a day on
yeah.
one drawing.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
good for you. I mean, yeah, we did that in Seattle. We spent, it was 6 weeks on one drawing, and it became this like ridiculous amassment of marks, but it was rigorous. It was like, you're like, oh my God, I don't know if I want to work on this anymore.
Right, right. You, at that point, you want it to be over. Right. but the other thing is, I think, you know, it makes perfect sense because you're so interested in narrative.
I am, yeah. Storytelling, for sure.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about your interest. Because I didn't read your earlier work as narrative, but it's increasingly become more and more narrative. Was it a gradual evolution, or was it something that you were always interested in, and then you moved away from it, and then you're sort of coming back to it? What is your...
Relations.
Your
yeah, what's the story? When I was a kid, I always thought I was going to be a writer and that I would be a novelist. which is hilarious.
Did you study English as an undergrad?
I did not. No, it was art. Okay. Actually, I did take a journalism class. I thought I was going to be a journalist, and then that didn't work out so well. I started taking art classes. But I've always loved stories, you know, storytelling stories. So there's up for me in the work, even if it's completely obscured, there's always a story in each body of work that I've done. Whether, if it's apparent or not to somebody else, but there's always an underpinning for me.
You mean it could be just a memory, a personal memory,
Or
it could be a complete narrative story.
Yeah, or even like a self-portrait. It's like, well, this is marking this day, but what did I do today? I drank some orange juice, you know? It's like, I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. And, you know, the way that you put the marks on the page, you know, where your work is an accumulation of marks. It's not, you're not just trying to, you know, recreate what you're looking at. You're recreating it with this series of small marks that each take time.
Yeah.
It's hard to make work like that. Like there's one that you have, it's a self-portrait with your face in the lower right-hand corner, and it's mostly yellow. And the idea of putting each of those marks on, what do you think that way of working?
Yeah, I don't know. It's so funny because I look back like even like a long time ago, back when I was, you know, an undergraduate, and I was doing that kind of mark making, but it's become more prevalent. And I have had people say, don't do that. Do you know, don't make those marks. They're, you know, ruining your drawing. I'm like, you know, screw you.
Did anybody ever tell Susan Rothenberg not to make
exactly? And of course, I love, and I'm sure it's been a grand influence on me.
Yeah, and also Judy Glansman.
Oh my God, who I adore! Mm-hmm. I think everybody adores Judy, but yeah, it's like don't do that. It's like no, I'm gonna
right, and then you double down.
Yeah,
you say, well, that's what makes
I'll
my work
show you.
Well, that's what makes your work uniquely your work.
Yeah, thank you. But yeah, it's become more, either I think my concentration level has become more gleaned, it's become more prevalent.
What do you mean?
It's like, I feel like it's become more, there's more marks being put down than ever before.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even in your drawing.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that you posted recently of the biology.
Oh, yeah, my bacteria drawings.
Yeah, the bacteria, that's what I meant. You know, are just that series of tiny marks.
Yeah, I can't explain why I need to do that, but it just comes out.
Mm-hmm. Are the paintings oil or are they acrylic?
There's, it's either oil or gouache. I've tried acrylic again and again, and I'm just like, ah. The small, I did that whole series of my walking maps were gouache. They were mostly, or like drawing paintings. But the last year I discovered, using solvent free, oil paints with, using chalk and as a binder. And that's been great. So
Did you read the Kimberly Brooks book?
It's exactly how, and I think, I swear to God, I got this information from your post. I think you're like, I just tried this. I'm like, what?
Well, it was funny because I had been hearing about the book, and I, you know, she's on Clubhouse quite a bit. And so I thought, oh, this is interesting. I should use solvent free. And then I was surprised that it just meant, you know, basically using linseed oil.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, the varnish and
turpentine,
terps,
or whatever,
and linseed oil. But then she had the section about the chalk. How does that work? I never actually got
it. So it thickens up. Yeah, I bought some. It thickens up the paint, and you can use as much or as little as you want. It dries a little bit slower than if you're using turpentine, of course. But it just it kind of renewed my love of oil paint. Which I hadn't used because I was getting worried about using it inside in a house where my studio's in my basement where we, you know, we all live in the same house. So I didn't want to fill the house up with the smell of solvents.
But also combustible rags.
Yeah.
Not good.
That's true. Although you still can, linseed oil can still catch on fire. So I've got a little trash can with a lid downstairs.
Right.
But yeah, I really like it.
So the chalk, so you thin the paint with the oil, but then you mix the chalk in.
You put the oil and the chalk together.
I see.
Yeah, and that makes, it's basically your medium.
So fat over thin.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to be careful how much chalk you put in there?
You do, but then you can, you know, you can keep adding. If you screw it up, you can,
keep
I'm not very,
oil.
Yeah.
I see.
I'm not an exact cook, so sometimes.
Right. Well, what else do you want to talk about? Do you have anything? What are you working on writing now, or is
I have
too,
you know
too
I
much,
have
too much focus.
There, and you know, and I have a few poems I'd like to finish, and I'd like to illustrate them and put up on my chapbook site, and I have some. I have a friend Wendy. A shout out to my friend Wendy. We're going to do some printmaking together if we can. She's in Seattle, I'm here in New London. We're gonna try to do it over Zoom because we used to meet up in classes. So I've got a baby press that I want to use a little
more.
Well,
that's interesting. What do you mean, like you can send each other files and then print them on the presses,
or do it at the same time, like talk to each other?
Oh, because that's the thing about printmaking, is it's very social.
Yeah.
Everybody's always in a big workshop and sharing.
Exactly.
Right.
So we took this monotype workshop. It was exactly 3 years ago. And it was like, you're just churning out monotypes. And it was really fun. We were like, wow, we should do something like that. So both feeling a little isolated. So we're like, oh, we could do that via Zoom. So
what kind of press do you have?
It's a little teeny baby press. I can't remember the name of it. I bought it from, somebody was getting divorced. I was like, I'll buy that from you.
Right.
And it's like the plate is that it can hold is 9x12. So it literally is a baby.
So is it like an etching press?
Yeah.
You would put blankets
on it? Felt, yep.
Uh-huh. And you I've used get it. Like a mono plate, you know, like a plexi plate.
Yep, get your paper soaking, and if I was really industrious, I could get a copper plate going, but that's not going to happen.
Right. But then, I suppose
really
you could
fun.
Do dry point. I was thinking you had to.
That's
etch it,
true. Yeah, you could do that on plexiglass, I think.
Right.
That's
right.
So beautiful. So yeah, that's the plan for the future. Got, you know, mm-hmm. little small bite projects. Nothing. You know, like kind of fitting into the day by day. Well, if this gets accomplished, that's excellent. If not,
right. Now, you published a chapbook too.
Well, it's not published. It's published on my on the website.
Oh,
I'd love.
I
I'd
thought you
loved,
actually had.
I think I said I was going to, and I would love to. I would love to publish, like have the illustration with the poem next to it, and there. That's I have a few more poems I'd love to add to it.
Mm-hmm. All you need is a PDF file.
Yeah.
And that can be yours.
I know.
You could just send it off to Blurb or Lulu.
Exactly.
And have them print a book.
I could do this.
Yeah.
So that's definitely another one of those, wouldn't it be great, you know, projects I have in the back of my head. So.
Well, you know, if you send it to me, I'll publish it on Two Coats of Paint Press. Oh,
that would be great. That would light a fire under my butt. I would
all
love that.
All I need is a PDF file.
That would be great, Sharon. I would
but
love that.
I suppose if you just had loose JPEGs, we could put it together.
I will. I'd love to do that.
Since energy is probably, you know,
yeah,
short supply.
Yeah, I've got grandiose ideas, and at the end of the day, it's like, well, that one thing got accomplished. So,
yeah, that would be great. It'd be great. To
I
have
would.
A
I would love
your,
that.
A book of your prints and drawings.
Oh, thanks.
Well, we're rolling up to Oh, wait, we have Virginia is coming up to the stage. Hi, Virginia.
Hello, hello. Hi, Sharon and Carolyn. Nice to
Hi.
Meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
I'm so glad Sharon brought you to us today. It was
really moving
to hear your story and how you are carrying on, and you're an inspiration. So
oh
I
my
just
God, thank
to
you.
Say that. And one little thing I wanted to add, you were talking about your love of the figure and figure drawing.
Mm-hmm.
I was in New York last week. I'm based in the LA area. And so I treated myself to an art fest, and I just saw art
nice.
All day long for several days.
I love that.
And had a great time. And there was an exhibition that I saw that I thought you'd be interested to see. I'm sure you could find it online.
Sure, tell me what it is.
It's Victoria Monroe Fine Art, and the artist is Jonathan Silver. And he passed away, I think, in the 90s, but his exhibition are these figure drawings. They're just remarkable. Mm-hmm. And also he did work with plaster and bronze, so there's sculpture as well, but they're just amazing.
Excellent.
And the reason why I wanted to mention it to you, because you were talking about your use of lines and how someone told you, stop doing that,
can't
too many
that.
Lines. And, this artist, he was trying to find that just the sweet spot between the lines and abstraction and,
uh-huh.
and bringing the image forth. So I loved it. It was one of the highlights
great.
Of
I'll
everything
look it up.
I saw.
Thank you.
Sure, sure.
Any other exhibitions in store?
I don't at the moment.
Projects
no.
that you want to share?
Yeah, I know. I'm like one of those not so, it's like, woohoo. I can tell you where to find me on. I'm posting a lot of my stuff on. I decided, it's like, well, who knows how long I'll be here. I'm going to post a lot of my favorite stuff I've done on Instagram right now.
And
I'm
just
hoping
to thank you for that, because I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying seeing those old things. And I told you earlier that whenever you post the old pictures of yourself, I think that, and especially that one of you when you were a little girl.
Oh, yeah.
I think that could have been me. I mean, I looked exactly like that. And so
I
it's
love
so
that.
Funny. And I think it has to do with, of course, the time period
forth,
where we all wore the same clothes. And we all had that haircut. But it's just really wonderful to see all the different phases that your drawings have gone through.
Your
life has gone through.
Yeah, thanks. I am hoping to do some more posts on my blog, Dangerous Chunky. So it doesn't languish. And I'm going to post my the list of all my books that I recommend.
Oh, definitely.
My Poets versus Painters.
Yes,
books.
I should say, I just want to tell everybody that Carolyn shared with me this list of poets and painters that she likes. I'm just going to read them for everyone, all right? Painters, Lisa Yuskovich, Catalog, Christopher Grimes Gallery, 1996. Amy Silman. Visiting Artist, Zine, updated, probably 2005. Susan Rothenberg, Paintings, 1998 to 2002, catalogs, Baroni Westwater. Amy Silman, Faux Pas, Selected Writings and Drawings, 2020. And then the list goes on, Judy Glansman Shows, Cecily Brown, Gerhard Richter, Inside the Painter's Studio, Joe Figg made the little dioramas of the studios, which I have to say, I love those too.
Oh my God, I love that book so much.
Chantal Joffe, which I just read a little excerpt from that catalog. Art London, A Guide to Places, Events, and Artists. Ishbel Myersko. I don't know who
she
that is.
She is Chantal's best friend. And she, it's interesting. So I only know this from reading a lot of articles about both of them.
Mm-hmm.
She does a lot of figurative work too. And they're the same age. They went to school together.
Oh, I'll have to look her up.
Yeah.
And then the runners-up, Philip Guston, Mama Anderson, Deborah Brown, Elizabeth Murray, Cy Twombly, Richard Diebenkorn, David Park, Pierre Bonnard, Andrea Zittel, Alice Neal, Lee Krasner, Willem de Kooning, Jasper Johns, Kiki Smith, Margaret Kilgallen, and Laura Splann.
Splann.
I don't know Laura Splann.
Oh, my God. She's amazing. She does real, like... She does real life, like work with viruses And I did a series of work that where I was like, I had the coronavirus and like BRCA2 and all these different viruses on little doilies that I painted. Mm-hmm. I did that about 2020, 2 years ago.
Interesting. So, you know, and speaking of Jasper Johns, I saw on Twitter you posted, and I just want to know what you meant by this. You said, after reading the Jasper Johns piece in the New York Times, you wrote, now I am quietly waiting for the catastrophe of my personality to seem beautiful again and interesting and modern. And that's then there was a link to a picture of Jasper Johns in his studio.
Yeah, I think that's a Frank O'Hara poem. And Jasper Johns made paintings about Frank O'Hara. But for some reason, there's no rhyme or reason why that was paired together. I just like it.
So that was a John O'Hara from a John O'Hara poem.
It's a Frank O'Hara poem. Yeah, it's one
is
of
that
my
what you're
favorites.
Saying?
Yep.
I mean Frank O'Hara.
Yep.
I just love that phrase, the catastrophe of my personality.
Isn't it the best?
Waiting for the catastrophe. I'll just read this again. Now I am quietly waiting for the catastrophe of my personality to seem beautiful again and interesting and modern. I think that's such a great line. And, you know, especially in an artist's life where it's such a roller coaster.
Oh, God, it is.
Sometimes you're feeling so good about everything in your work and your life and all of it. And then other times it's like, oh, man.
Why am I doing this?
It's like a dumpster fire.
That's a perfect way to put it.
So I thought that was a great quote. And so I'm going to have to look that up. All right. For the poets, there are many here. I don't know who they are. Adelia Prado.
She's Brazilian.
Ilya Kaminsky.
I don't know where he wrote about it, her. So that's just kind of a sidebar.
Lunch Poems, Frank O'Hara again. Antonio Machado. Mm-hmm. In Memory of My Feelings, Frank O'Hara and American Art. And then Musa McKim.
Oh my God. I love and adore her. In fact, I'll admit, I actually got one of her poems tattooed on me because I wanted to have it on me at all times.
I saw that, and I wasn't sure that was your tattoo.
It was my tattoo, and I always wore turtlenecks.
Can you read
sure,
it?
Sure, absolutely. It's because it's my biggest fear. The poem is called "I Thought I Would Never." I thought I would never write anything down again. Then I put on my cold wristwatch. And that's all it says. And I have on my back the first part and on the front of me the second part. And it's also, she was unfortunately probably best known as being Philip Guston's wife. Mm-hmm. And they did poetry drawing collaborations. And I have a little drawing of his wristwatch on my back, which I know everyone loves him, but I love her. She inspires me.
Well, you know, I didn't realize that she was a poet, and I was looking her up. She's not even listed in the Poetry Foundation.
No. She quietly made her poems, and at the end of her life, put all of these together, and her daughter helped get her this one chapbook, or one book. It's called Alone with the Moon, Selected Writings of Musa McKim. And I think that's all that exists of her work.
Right, and it was published in 1994, 2 years after she died.
Yeah. Hmm. So, yeah.
Well, you know, I wish that there was a site online where you could read her poetry.
Me too.
Do you have any nearby that you could read one?
Another one of her poems?
Yeah.
She was so, I love that she, yeah, I've got the book with me. Some of them are long, and then some of them are really short. And some of them are just funny, like this one. I love you like two Eskimo pies. At once, exclamation point. Play with me. No, you locked me in the cellar. I'm sorry. Silliness.
I'll have to look for that and order it, but I bet it's very
super hard to find.
To buy one, yeah.
It's hard to find, yeah.
All right. And then there's a long list of other poets here. And you're going to post this on your...
I will. I'll put it on Dangerous Chunky.
If you put it on Dangerous Chunky, I will put a link to it in the show notes.
Excellent.
So that people can access it. Well, this has been great, Carolyn. Oh, I really have enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much. I'm so touched you wanted to talk to me. And it's just such a pleasure. You're such a lovely person to chat with.
Well, you know, I always meant to stop by when I was into London.
I know.
I was teaching at UConn last semester. And I just, you know,
It was winter.
Yeah, you know, everyone's always driving here, driving there, going, doing the other things. I think it was long past time to sit down and get to know you a little bit better.
Oh, thanks. Ditto. I'd love to talk more to you sometime. That would be great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm definitely willing to come up there, but I certainly don't want to wear you out. So thanks, Carolyn, for joining us today.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, everyone. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and thanks for joining us on stage. If you want to share the conversation or just listen again, Two Coats of Paint conversations are now archived in rough podcast format. Meaning nothing fancy, no bells or whistles. On most of the podcast platforms, all you need to do is subscribe to Two Coats of Paint Conversations on, you know, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, any of those, and you'll get it in your feed. The audio should be posted by the end of the day, so keep a lookout for that. And I guess I'll see everyone next time. Thanks for joining.